This is All Things Considered on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Earlier this week, State Senator Jason Carter of Atlanta won the Democratic nomination for governor. He joins us now in his office in Midtown, the campaign office. Senator Carter, congratulations and welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you, Dennis. It's great to be here.
You have made education sort of the centerpiece of your platform. You have talked about, for instance, budgeting for education first in the legislature before anything else gets appropriated. Why is that so important, and does it really make any difference? Because you're having to balance a budget anyway. You have revenue estimates that come from the governor. So is that really something that is going to change anything for education?
Dennis, I think education should be our first priority every year, not just in election years, but every year. And it is the fundamental building block for our economy. It's the primary investment that our state makes in its people. We have seen over the last several years the worst contraction of public education in the history of Georgia. There's 9,000 fewer teachers. There's 45,000 fewer technical college students. Those are numbers that show we're heading in the wrong direction. I believe that honesty and transparency in the budget and political accountability for the politicians in Atlanta to say we are balancing this budget not on the backs of our school kids, but by having education first and then make tough budgeting decisions with respect to everything else in the budget, that will matter.
The economy, as everyone knows, had a very, very difficult time. Governor Deal cut education less than most other departments in the budget. He actually added some $500 million in spending in the fiscal year 15 budget. So what would you say to someone who says, look, the governor and the legislature were already trying to put education first. They were doing all they could with the difficult economic cards they were dealt.
There's no doubt that running this state requires tough budgeting choices, and we have to balance our budget every year. We are a fiscally conservative state, and we have been for many, many years. Those are good things. But we cannot do what they have done for the last several years, which is to cut education to pay for other things. There's no doubt that's what happened. We've been raiding the education fund to pay for other things. You can balance the budget, not on the backs of education. That's the proposal.
You sit in the legislature. Where did they cut education, and what other things did they pay for with that money?
Well, as you know, we have a formula that we have underfunded by billions of dollars a year. One of the things that happens when you cut education, you can act like you're saving money, but it is a different type of investment that the state makes from everything else, because it is a true investment in the future. And if you cut education the way they have, you're really eating your seed corn. You're not preparing our state for the future. What they have done, as opposed to my proposal, in my proposal, what you would see is you fund education first. You're politically accountable for that. Those education cuts that we've seen have turned into tax increases at the local level on property taxes and other things. And if we avoid that and say we are going to fund education first, we can make those tough budgeting decisions, and everything else in the budget competes against those other items and not our first priority, which is education.
But you were in on those budget votes. So if you're saying, okay, they're paying for other things with this, then if you were governor, where would you cut to make that up?
Sure. I think the point is that we have been operating under the false choice that you've just presented. The answer is not, do we cut specific things to fund education? The answer is, like any family, we're not going to stop. When times are tough, you're not going to stop paying the mortgage unless you have to. You're not going to stop buying food. You're not going to do the things you must do. And for us in this state, funding education is what you must do. And then you take that and you take everything else in the budget. And there's going to be tough choices, no doubt. And you can sit and negotiate with a Republican legislature if you're a Democratic governor, but there have to be cuts. Those cuts don't compete with education. That's the biggest difference. And what we have seen is that year after year, we're taking out of the education fund to pay for that rest of the budget. There's no doubt if we add money into the education budget, we'll have to balance our budget on the backs of everything else that are in the budget, no doubt. And that's tough, but that's what priority looks like.
But let's say you were the governor. Let's say you have won. It's the governor who submits the budget recommendations to the legislature. So if you're saying, okay, we're going to balance the budget on the backs of some other things, what other things come to your mind first?
I think that we have a giant amount of operational expense within the agencies of the government that can be reduced. I think you see all across the board our state failing to innovate with regard to technology use, with regard to a host of other things within the state government that can reduce fraud and we can reduce waste in a variety of contexts. I think you have right now a state that's being run by people who don't believe that the entity of the government can succeed and be efficient and effective. And so we're not looking for those kinds of cost-saving answers. And if you comb that budget the way that we would be forced to do, you will find the savings that we need to find, whether it's within operational agencies or whether it's outside in other programs. We would be able to do it.
One of the ideas that's been tried by this administration and going back to the previous one is public-private partnerships. The idea is you can get the services for less money if you contract with the private sector. Any problem with that, or do you think we're doing it enough?
I think that public-private partnerships can be great ways of administering some of the services that the state needs to provide. I think, again, if you're driving for answers for an effective and efficient government, that's one of the elements on the table. What we have seen in Georgia is ideology driving a lot of decisions rather than actual problem solving. And one of the great advantages you would have with a balanced government that's not dominated by a single party is an honest and fair discussion about when those work, when they save money, when they get you better services, and when they don't.
Are there any services, though, that to you would be off limits for a public-private partnership?
I'm sure there are some. But for the most part, you know, we should look at those issues on a case-by-case basis and be open to the idea of public-private partnerships, absolutely. And we do that extensively in a number of areas, including education in different contexts, including the provision of child welfare services and other items.
One idea to try to help with the budget problems and bring more revenue in is to overhaul the tax system. There has been talk of a consumption tax. There are committees looking at that right now. Do you favor either exploring or implementing a consumption tax instead of the current income tax system for the state?
I think we can look at a broad range of tax reform, but that's one of the examples of the failures of this administration. We had the ability to generate real tax reform, and the governor and the leadership together couldn't get it done. And so we have, if we're going to have real pro-business tax reform in this state, it's going to have to be undertaken by a different coalition that I believe includes a Democratic governor like me and a legislature that I can work with.
You said you've never voted for a tax increase, but if you look at the kinds of things you're talking about, increasing investment in education plus some of the needs that the state has right now, transportation, infrastructure, particularly repairs of things like bridges and highways, these are major capital outlays, the idea possibly of rapid transit, intercity transit. How do you pay for all of these things without increasing revenue somehow? And the usual way is through a tax hike.
Well, anything that you want to pay for has to come from either inside the budget or outside the budget, as you say. We make tough budgeting choices every day, and we need to continue that process. I don't think you can ask the people of Georgia to pay more in taxes until you stop the shell game of our budgeting process. People don't trust the government to spend money wisely. That was evident in the votes that they've taken on transportation funding, for example. And until you restore the trust in the government, for example, by creating a separate education budget or by being honest about where our motor fuel sales taxes go, until you shore that up, people are not going to pay more in taxes, and that shouldn't be on the table. And it won't be if I'm the governor, unless and until the Republicans and the Democrats agree that it has to be done. But I just don't foresee that in any event.
But can you do all of these things without a tax increase? The governor is going to say, look, his math just doesn't add up. He can't do that.
But the governor's argument is a false paper tiger. He is attacking something that's not real. There's no proposal that I have made that requires additional revenue, period. The proposal that I have made is that we need transparency and honesty with respect to the way we administer our school funding. And that will require us to continue to balance the budget, and it will require us to do it somewhere else rather than an education budget, period. But that doesn't require gigantic amounts of additional revenue, and he's fighting a battle from 15 years ago.
On the ethics front, just in the last day, it's revealed that the state is spending about $1.5 million on the lawsuit that was brought by the former director or head of the Ethics Commission staff, Stacey Kalberman. You have said that the investigation of the governor's campaign should be reopened. But is the problem really with the governor's campaign? I mean, it's a very convenient thing to say, let's do that during another campaign. Or is the problem really with the commission itself and how it handled that case and others?
For years, I have been advocating for an independent ethics commission that should be funded separately from the budgeting process so that it's not susceptible to the type of politics that we have seen. There is no doubt that we have fundamental flaws in our ethics commission and in the ethics laws of our state, and I have been a tireless advocate for reforming that. What has happened now is we are now paying taxpayer money for the governor's cover-up of a prior investigation. To me, we ought not pay all that money, period. We shouldn't have been put in this situation, and we still don't know what was being investigated? What was the subject matter of this item, of this investigation that was so bad that the governor wanted to cover it up? We don't know. We're looking for answers, but we need an independent ethics commission that we can trust. Absolutely.
How do you know, though, that the governor covered it up? I mean, what's the link between him and the lawsuit, which didn't name the governor at all?
Well, the jury in Fulton County found that the State Ethics Commission ran Ms. Kalberman out because she was investigating the governor. The Ethics Commission is appointed in part by the governor and dominated by his office. Those were the allegations as I understand them. I don't know the facts, and I wasn't there. But I think that no one knows those facts, and that's why I think the investigation ought to be reopened.
I asked him about a contact that his executive counsel, Ryan Teague, had with the Ethics Commission in which they discussed bringing in a new head of the staff, executive secretary for the Ethics Commission, to replace Stacey Kalberman. He said the Ethics Commission called his staff, and he didn't even know about it until after the fact. Do you take his word for that?
I don't think any of us know the facts. I think that a jury has determined that Ms. Kalberman was fired wrongfully for investigating the governor. I don't know anything beyond that. I think we deserve to have all the information on the table as citizens and as taxpayers who are now footing the bill for this cover-up.
On the economy, Metro Atlanta's unemployment rate just hit a low that we haven't seen in quite a while, 6.5%. The governor will certainly argue, and has, that his policies, attracting companies, helping with workforce development, are helping in that, although you always have global and national forces at work too. How can you argue with lower unemployment, particularly in Metro Atlanta, which has been as high as 7-8% in the past?
What we have seen is that Georgia continues to lag behind other states in participating in this, in the recovery that we all hope is coming. Georgia families are not feeling it the way that they are in many other states. We're languishing at the bottom with respect to unemployment, with respect to poverty, and then with respect to a variety of other issues that impact people's everyday lives. And the governor's touting of his economic record, I think, demonstrates how out of touch he is with regular middle-class Georgians. Over the last decade, the median family income in Georgia has dropped by almost $6,500 at almost twice the national rate. We are getting less and less from our economy for regular people, and I think the governor fails to see that, and that's going to be costly.
So what would you do differently?
I think, number one, you have to invest in education, and you have to ensure that people are getting the skills that they need. We have 45,000 fewer technical college students because of this governor's policies. We've seen access to education get more and more difficult. When the governor took office, there were 250,000 HOPE recipients. This year, there will be 150,000. We are not getting people the skills that they need in order to move into the higher paying jobs. That's not matching what the market needs, and it's not getting us prosperous people. We have to have an economy that works for everybody from top to bottom, not just for the governor's friends.
The governor did sign a couple of bills relating to expanding the HOPE technical grant, basically restoring a lot of the cuts that had been made. And those were bills that were initiated, at least in part, by one of your colleagues, a Democrat, State Representative Stacey Evans of Smyrna. Are we again at a point where the governor can say, look, I know we had a tough time, we did what we had to do to keep the programs alive, and now we're restoring the cuts because times are better?
I don't think so. The governor has failed to admit the ultimate failure with respect to the technical college system, and he's put a Band-Aid on this patient that's in critical condition. And the bills that he has passed were watered-down versions of good ideas, and we have to be committed to getting people the skills that they need, period. And this administration does not have a record that would give any indication that that commitment exists.
If we restore the cuts to HOPE, the HOPE scholarship now, not the technical college grant, we restore the HOPE scholarship that so many folks are paying more to cover, do you have any idea what that would cost?
We have the ability to make the HOPE scholarship a key access to education program. That's what it was always intended to be. And we are beginning now to reap what we've sown in a dismal harvest from the lack of skilled work that we are producing, workers that we need to produce. And we have to recommit ourselves to that access. Today, the HOPE scholarship only pays, in Tifton the other day, it only pays 67% of the cost to go to ABAC. There's a great number of students that are getting left out. It didn't have to be that way when the governor changed it. We put together programs and alternatives that would have cost less, and we failed to solve this problem in a way that was effective, that those solutions are still out there.
Can we afford to restore all of the cuts to the HOPE scholarship, or do we have to go back to what HOPE was in its early days, which was an effort to help first the kids who couldn't afford it? Do we have to go to means testing if we can't cover everyone with fully restored HOPE scholarship?
It is true that we cannot afford to pay for everyone. There is no doubt. And therefore, we have to make a tough choice. To me, you must consider the need of the people in order to do that. Instead of spending millions and millions of dollars to pay for people to go to college who don't need it. We look at the best and the brightest from every community in this state, and these are the proposals that we've put together, the top students in every community, not just certain communities. We can't leave rural Georgia out. We can't leave many of our other schools besides our flagship institutions out, and we can put together a HOPE program that will provide the maximum number of students have access to education, but you have to consider those students' need, absolutely.
State Senator Jason Carter of Atlanta, Democratic nominee for governor. Thanks so much for giving us this time. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.